I was faking. I didn't really hurt myself. But I think forever I'll do that. Jabril Brown. Brother. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for letting me be on the podcast, man. Thank you for letting me be on this podcast, bro.
I'm excited, man. You know, the fact that the day we were messaging back and forth, you automatically called me and wanted to have a conversation with me. I was like, all right, this is gonna be a fun time. This is gonna start out good.
Yeah, man. Like, I was just hyped because, you know, I don't get props all the time. You know what I mean? Just, it's been the last couple podcasts I've been doing and stuff. I appreciate it, bro. You know what I mean?
And so you've been on lots of podcasts and probably lots of interviews. People like coming to conventions and stuff and sitting at your table and asking you lots of questions. What's something that you're asked the most on interviews?
Shoot. The most is on a real deal is like, they're like surprised that like I'm the guy behind the table. You know what I mean? Probably like when I first started this, like we would go to, I guess, Philadelphia Wizard Comic Con. And I think the first time I went to the real big Philadelphia Wizard Comic Con, I think there was probably like 5 to 6 blacks. And I was the only one that had like my, there was only like probably one other guy that had their own material. And I said, I'm going to change that. So I went out and I would go shopping for brothers and sisters, gays, straight, everything. And I did my own, that's my other boss for Boys and Girls Club. Yeah, it is like, I told a lot of people, I said, I work for the Boys and Girls Club. I want to get, you know, more minorities involved, and nobody listened to me. So I started going around recruiting, and I started my own Comic-Con. And everybody was like, it's going to be a black Comic-Con? I said, no. And they were like, that was the main thing. They're like, that was one of the main things. It's just going to be a whole black Comic-Con. And then when they seen the woman I was with, they were like, oh, like, you got little Barack Obama babies. You know what I mean? So they were like, why don't you just do an all black Comic-Con? I said, nah, because it's for everyone. You know what I mean?
I mean, being a comic book nerd is already so separating.
Yeah.
Like it's already so niche. Like that's like if it's like a all black, then people are gonna feel like they're not gonna be allowed to come or something. Yeah. Like some.
And I used to go to black Comic Cons. Just go to like there was like two. There mm-hmm. was like two black all Comic Cons. And when I said I'm gonna change it, oh, they didn't like that. That was one of the main questions. Like, why you want to do this, Jabbar? Like, and my thing was, I said, by the time I get done, y'all be switching over to me. And I got more brothers running Comic Cons, and they were like, even though I got alienated a lot, but I stood in. You know what I mean? And just to have, I wanted everybody to be included. Doesn't matter, you know, what race you are, what sex you like or whatever, you should just all be included if you're creative. You know what I mean?
Do you think that there could be UFOs that like change people into aliens? Right? Like they can like zap some ray down and then turn them into one of their species. Do you think that if that UFO was to do that, those people would be alienated? They were like, ah, you're an alien now. You're alienated.
Yeah, they'd be kicked. You know what I mean? Like, they would be straight kicked, like a Bruce Lee kicked out. Bruce Lee went to Chinese Connection, and they said, your style is not good enough. And then he just went and whipped the whole school. That's what we need. And that's what I was trying to come in and do. And I mean, I had a lot of people that didn't like me for it, but after a while, they respected me for it.
Did you ever see Rocko's Modern Life? Remember that show?
Yeah.
Remember the his friend Filbert the turtle? He like got possessed by an alien, and then he went around. He would say high five, and then the people would high five him, and then they'd like poof disappear.
They change up and they'd be gone. You know what I mean?
It's poof disappear. They just walk around high five.
Because they were like, they were like, Jabbar, like, why are you trying to change the whole aspect? I said, if we need to change the whole aspect so we'd be looked at as human beings, I said, that's the thing. Where everybody's looking at us is separate. If you're this, you're separate. If you're this, you're separate. If you're this, you're separate. I was like, if we're under the sun, we're all human beings. So why can't anyone get this right? You know what I mean? So that's why, like, even when it came down to books, they'd be like, well, Jabbar, you got all black books. I said, because that's what I am. I mean, it's what Jack Kirby told us. He said, draw what you are. And if there's not a lot of you in the field, we need you out here in the field. And that's why Stan Lee didn't like him. When he did Black Panther and all that type of stuff, people don't even understand. When he did the Black Panther, he went up after Malcolm X's death. He left and went to ask the Black Panthers, can I make a comic book about you guys? Huey Newton said, the one I have on my shirt, Huey Newton said, no, make it plural. Make one that runs Africa. Because Africa's so separated. But if you have one king that can run everything in Africa, this is what we need to do. Stanley fired him next day. Everybody's seen, if you go back and look at the art of the original Black Panther, he has no sleeves on. You see his gloves, and you can see these lines on his gloves. You see lines on his face and stuff. They tried to take the blackness out, so they just put a whole black suit on because they didn't want anybody to know that he was brown, and so you couldn't sell the comic book that way. And they fired Jack Kirby, and next thing you know, he's doing Danger Mouse, and he's doing Popeye.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then he had to make it way back in the game. He did Avengers and brought Black Panther in. And Black Panther gave everybody their equipment, everything, and Stanley fired him again. And I said, and that's why he was kind of like, I know we're not supposed to idolize people, but I idolize the mindset of him, what he gave people, and people don't even realize they just give Stan Lee all these props. This man can't draw. He couldn't. When I met Stan Lee, he couldn't draw a goddamn lick. He couldn't draw Spider-Man. He was charging little kids $400 something just to stand near him. We had a box of tape around him, but you couldn't stand by him. I said, "Yo, we supported your life, yo, and kids can't even hug you, bro." You know what I mean? I said, you're not even an artist.
Was that during COVID, though? Or was that?
No, it was way before COVID.
He didn't live to COVID, did he?
Nope. No. And that's the thing, yo. Like, you're going to reap what you sow, because he sold Marvel out for Power Rangers. And when he tried to do his own company, it totally failed. You know what I mean?
I don't understand what you mean by he sold Marvel out for Power Rangers. What does that mean?
He put him and Gail Hurd went overseas, bought action parts of where these guys are fighting, these five people are fighting and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then came to America and did little parts of this show where you see these kids in the high school. That's why the Power Rangers never looked like it was taped right.
Right.
But he gave all the stocks out because he thought this was going to save Marvel, and it didn't. That's why, like, he was begging to be in a Marvel movie. Can you just put me in this one little part? And it's not, nobody wanted him. Spider-Man's and stuff. And he goes, hey, there goes Spider-Man. He was fired then. People don't even know. He wasn't even allowed to be in Marvel shit. So when even came down to Black Panther, the last, like, they were like, nah, man. You got to pay Jack Kirby. So his estate is still paying Jack Kirby's estate. And that's why I said, when it came down to people, like, yo, Jabbar, who you want to be when you grow up? You want to be Martin Luther King or the first president? And I'll be like, hell no, I'm going to be Jack Kirby. They'd be like, nigga, I can't do that. You can't be that. You know what I mean? I was like, if Michael Jackson could be white, shit, I could do that. You know what I mean? Like, so I was down. So my thing is,
that's a good measure for what you can do. If you're like, if Michael Jackson could be white, I can do anything.
Yes. And that's how I seen it. And I said, you know, I'll be a teacher. And if I can be a teacher and I can help these kids out, if I can't make a change, or make a spark in the world, if I could teach them, they could be able to make the spark in the world. And that's why I've just been always comic book, and I've been teaching them comic books even from kindergarten. Even if you go on my Facebook, you can go see like the kids in gardens that I work with, everything. And they draw on like fifth or sixth graders, because that's how much love I got from them. I'm blessed that God gave me the creative thing so I can create and give it to them. You know what I mean? And yeah, I can see them now, they got goatees, they got kids and stuff, they work with like graphic designers. So even though I might not be rewarded as much, but to see them still living, they're not in jail, that's my reward.
What you're talking about is exactly what you and I were just talking about when I was saying this sacrifice and the stories that I've been through, the life that I've lived, if it was just to inspire one person, then, and if you're inspiring those kids and then those kids take what they learned and then apply it to their life and improve their life, like there's accomplishment there.
Yeah, that's all I have. The only reward I really get, and I tell people, I don't have too much, and I'm just grinding. You know what I mean? Like I told people before, you know, I didn't learn how to read until I was 25, when I was in college. But right. Now I got 51 books under my name. You know what I mean?
Awesome. So yeah,
I tell people you can do anything. You know what I mean?
You make it to college not knowing how to read?
My art skills.
Okay.
I got a scholarship. I failed every school. Like I never passed an art class until I was like 30 something.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Even when, like the art institute, they were like, I passed the classes, but they were like, yo, you got to do the exams and stuff. I failed all that shit. So my teacher was like, why you keep reading the book backwards? I was like, that's how I see shit. And he was like, what? He's like, that's why we can't get you to the board or anything. I was like, yeah. I said, because everything's so jumbled around. So I would never go to the board. So my thing was, like, when I told him, he was like, brother, you're going to have to learn how to read. So my first book I ever read was Revolution Suicide by Huey Newton. So I got my mind right. And I said, you know, if I'm a two-bit piece of crap drug dealer and I can sell people death, I know I can sell them my literature. I know I can sell them my art. And it just, that was my drive. You know what I mean? And sometimes I'll put the crack down and put it in this, like in a Coke bottle and put it to the side, and I bring out my stuff from Kinko's and I let them sit. And I know half of these people because the thing was, they were just like me. So half of them, they graduated out of eighth grade, they quit already. But if I could sit them down for like 5 or 6 minutes, not to be hustling on Fifth of Madison, Seventh Room, and Eighth of Van Buren, if I can get them just to read a book just for a couple minutes, that's a sacrifice I got to take for not making that money. But it's also helping them other people out there just like me, so they can read a little bit, enjoy themselves. And that's all I ever wanted to do. And that was my drive. And you know what I mean? That's what made me. And I think that's what made me a better man in life. So all the trials and tribulations, yo.
You should be like talking at big events. Like you should be doing keynote speeches, like in front of packed arenas.
It's a sad story. That's a lot of people say, why don't you write a book? I'll be like, it's a sad story. I don't even.
Well, man, sometimes you got to get the sad to get to the glad, you know, for me personally, and I'm not trying to make it about me, but for me personally, I don't live with so many regrets, knowing that all the decisions I made, some of them were bad ones. They all made me who I am right now. And I love me right now the most. So I wouldn't kind of take any of that stuff back. And that includes the bad.
And that's what I'm trying not to do. And like, even when a couple of my friends have told me, it's like, yo, you just got to live with it, bro. You know what I mean? So my thing is, like, I try to tell homeboy on the other podcast, like, he got it too. I was like, I tell the truth. Like, I ain't got shit to hide. I'm open book. You know what I mean? Like when I was telling you about selling my soul, like I'm looking at homelessness. So I was like, yo, I even though I might be looking at homelessness, but I can't sell my soul. So I'm gonna have to put extra work in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just to keep staying in insanity. Cause the only one I have right now is the Lord right now. And right there, I'm what's going on, little dude? You're not gonna be with us today?
What are you doing?
Pretty good. Doing a podcast. Have a hug. So I get back to my podcast. You have a good day today. All right. Love you, little man. See you tomorrow.
That was so sincere and so pleasant to witness. Love that.
Yeah, that's my babies, man. That's my babies. Got to teach the babies. I love my babies, man. That's all I got. You know what I mean? I don't have too much love anywhere else. Even my own kids don't like me that much. You know what I mean? But they love me. You know what I mean? And I love them. That's all I got.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So how many kids do you have?
I have 3 kids. I raised 8. You know what I mean?
That's a lot of raising.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a lot of raising.
Yeah. As long as they live in any out of jail, I think I did a good job. So I never had that phone call be like, hey, daddy, you might have to put your house up. I'd be like, nigga, I don't even got a house, nigga. We got a law. You know what I mean? So, I was just so glad I never got that phone call. You know, it was always like, that's why I said, you know, as long as I have my art, that's the only thing I can, that's the only thing I do have left of me is my art. And I want to leave a legacy behind. You know what I mean? I see death around the corner. And that's why I create. It's hard to sleep.
Quoting Tupac again?
Yeah, that's the only real thing. And that's how I see it. Mm-hmm. Like when I'm in California, that's like from Delaware to California, back to here again. I see it all the time. You know what I mean? I see it when I sleep. I can look over myself when I sleep sometimes. And I'll be looking at me. You know, and it's like, yo, get back up and start creating because you don't know when you're going to go. You know what I mean? Time waits for no man. You know what I mean?
This is temporary.
I'm just a vessel. And I got to create. That's why I try to give back to the kids. That's why I give back to the babies. That's why I love the babies. Cause I don't know how long I'm going to be here. You know what I mean? So that's my whole main thing. So I that's why I'm here. I was going to retire this year. And I felt broken when I thought about the plan. And I was like, I shouldn't make plans. I should make goals. If I make a plan, I'm going to fail. You know what I mean? Just like the king, if I go on a dream, I'm going to wake up to a nightmare. You know what I mean? So my thing is, don't sleep and create. I know it's bad for me. My boy said, yo, you need sleep. You need rest for your body and stuff. I'm like, man, I got time for that. So I ain't got time for that, bro. I got to create. Because, you know what I mean? That's why I'm doing. That's why I'm taking on so many projects right now. I mean, things was going so weird and strange for me. That's why I'm working on. Like, I'm working on 6 projects right now. You know what I mean? If I can get them all out, I can stop and then I can just go really in and I want to start a teaching program for the red line districts inside the cities and start a creative writing and comic book thing where they can create, because not everybody's a football player, a basketball player, or a rapper and stuff. If I can get them to create, I can have some more Spike Lee's and we can have more black directors like Ken and Peele and stuff.
Dude, you know, I just saw this thing yesterday and I saw a trailer for it. It's like a new show that's on Amazon, but it's in Spanish, so I didn't watch it because I don't understand Spanish. I don't speak Spanish.
Neither do I. Our girl Julia Rodriguez would cuss me out, and I'd be like, I will get the Mighty Kongs and everything, but after that, I wouldn't get anything else. You know what I mean?
The show took it's like a docu-series, like a reality docu-series kind of thing. But this this woman was teaching acting and like comedy to inmates in Mexican prisons. And they made a reality series out of it.
Whoa.
And I was like, ah, shit.
Found somebody that digs you and that loves you and will care, that has sympathy, take it, brother. Because right now, like, just since I've been talking to you, one of my friends, she's a soldier, and she's we've been knowing each other for 3 years. I mean, she's been through combat. When you see that plane take off a couple years ago when they were attacking the embassy, that was my best friend. That's my like somebody I really truly in with. Like she said, Jabbar, we were on that plane and people were just falling off the plane and stuff. And she called me a little bit, but she was like, Jabbar, we're being attacked. I don't know if we'll be able to talk again. She said those couple roadside bombings. I don't know if we'll be able to make it to the plane. This whole place is being let out. And it's great happening in the war. And I'm like, No, because I'm watching television and ain't shit happening. There's a lot of motherfucking shit talking. She's like, no, what America ain't saying, you'll see it later on, but you're going to see us trying to get to a plane. And it was weird because I seen my baby girl get to a plane and like I didn't even know later on. She was like, that was me on that plane. She was like, I was the captain of that plane. And I just remember like people hanging on the hangar thing, falling off the plane from Iraq and stuff. Like, and I was like, baby, that was you. She's like, I manned that ship.
Wow.
I was like, what? And like, we can feel each other. That's how much of coolness. Like, we can feel each other when something's going wrong. And like, and I just got off the phone with her and like, this is the second break before you called. I said, baby girl, she was like, yo, go knock it out the park. She's like, cause I can feel that you're going to start doing good. And if you're getting podcasts and things like that, go on there and knock it out the park. And one day you like, I don't know about our love, but it's going to be something different. I was like, what? And then it was like, and you bringing that up, yo, if you have somebody that loves you and you love her, dude, keep it. Because there's a whole bunch of narcissist, crazy motherfuckers out here. That, like, And like, just one lady just now, she was like, I'll pay your rent. I know you're a way overdue, but you got to love me. And I'm like, yo, like, you're making me feel like a whore. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, this, because I don't love her. That same, like, I called the cops before on her. I'm terrified of the woman. You know what I mean? Like, I'm terrified. I mean, that was the first time I went outside. That's my fact. That was the first time I ever hugged the cop. Mm-hmm. I called the cops and ran outside. I said, turn your cameras on, turn your cameras on. They were like, what? I said, please just turn your cameras on, motherfuckers. I got to tell you something. I'm dealing with a covert narcissist. I'm a counselor, and I know what narcissism is. I had to take a class on it, but she's going to do it. And she has a special needs son up there. She's going blind. So I know she's going to put the empathy and sympathy thing on you, but it's a triangulation thing. And they were like, what? And I was like, yeah. So first she's going to gaslight you. And then after that, she's going to love bomb you. And then she's going to bring her son into it. Yo, they seen the whole thing, yo. And I had to put her out. Like, I felt so bad, but I felt so good because I was like, I need my peace. And I know that wasn't love. But if you know that you got somebody that's special, like you just, what you said, I can see like the smile and the aura on your face, dude. Mm-hmm. Keep that woman, yo. Keep that woman, yo.
Thanks, man. I read this joke today, and I'm going to tell you what it is. Tell me if you ever heard this one. Maybe this is something that's been circling around in the counseling circles. It said, how many narcissists does it take to screw in a light bulb?
One.
None. They use gaslighting.
Ooh. I'm like, can I steal that?
You absolutely, I it's not mine. So take it.
I'm going to use that. I'm going to use that. Oh, because I mean, because I was even getting by a ring a couple months ago for a woman. And wow. I didn't know, like, I was just so in love with her. I just passed through the red flags. And my counselor was like, you know, you're an empath. Mm-hmm. But you just wanted to love her so much. And I mean, I was going to marry her. And this right now, it's like, nope. She's devilish like a motherfucker.
You can't ignore those red flags.
She was a shark. I wouldn't know what to do.
Right.
Since October, since Halloween. I mean, like, I finally got my peace back and everything. That's why I was like, it is good because, like Frank Percy said, yo, lift your head up and start your life again. He said, I seen what you've been going through. I seen what you went through. He said, because I know your ex. He said, I know Allison very well, and she got you good. Anybody can throw 23 years away and do it on her anniversary, and your kids, she already told everybody. She told the whole family, told the kids except you. He said, that's some cruel shit. And he was like, you got to live your life again. And I was like, yo, and this is weird because everything is starting to happen. You know what I mean? So
I mean, without being too specific, what particular red flags were you ignoring?
She would. It was like, it was to me, it was. I didn't realize like it was too good to be true, and two, she started doing the disappearing acts. And she come back and say she wouldn't do it again, and it sounded really good. And I'm like, but I wasn't seeing that was the love bombing. And then she, you know, we do all kinds of stuff. I mean, she even met my mom. I took her to see my mom, and there was a lot of gaslighting and love bombing. Mm-hmm. And then we got back to Brooklyn, and good for a little while, good. Then bad, disappearing act again. And it was like more love bombing and gaslighting. And then she was like, yeah, I would be there on Halloween. She made it sound really good. Then she was like, I'm going to break up with you. And I was like, for what? And then it was just like, I see you on Thanksgiving. Never showed up. But I had faith in her. Mm. She kicked a couple good games. Yeah, baby, you know, I love you, this and that. And I was like, yo, but I feel that something's wrong. So I already knew. I said, now I'm feeling, I said, I had to go down and ask the Lord. So I put everything in the Lord's hand because I feel that I'm bit, like the situation I was in for 23 years, I ignored so many red flags, but now I'm seeing them in you. And I said, I love you just as much as I love somebody for 23 years. So I know there was gaslighting and love bombing because it sounds so good. You know what I mean? I was like, the things you're saying and the way you're doing it, you're making me chase you. Yeah. It shouldn't be a chase if you're in love with me. And I'm chasing you.
Something I've kind of learned with that sort of thing, not to say specifically that that's happening to me at all, but mm-hmm. I mean, in the past when that sort of thing has happened, I'm better off recognizing those things and not sharing with somebody that I do recognize them, because then they'll get better at hiding them.
Yes.
So,
and that, like, was me. I
won't show my hand. Like, I'll, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'll know what card I've been, what hand I've been dealt, but I'm not going to show my cards, you know?
Yes.
So if I feel a certain way, if I feel like somebody is putting up certain red flags that I, like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do anything about them, then I'll just keep that to myself. I will have that conversation with myself, or maybe I'll talk to my therapist about it. Maybe I'll talk mm-hmm. to my peer support counselor. Like, I'm now getting myself in a position where I have resources. You know what I mean? I have resources
yeah.
to talk to friends, people that I trust about what could be going on. One more time. Not to say that anything like that is currently going on, because I definitely took a close look at like my closest circle and the people I spend the most time with, the people I share the most of me with, as far as like yeah. what information, where I'll be at, that like little tiny like personal things. Yeah. I looked at that close circle and I yeah. took out all the people who weren't serving me as much as I was serving them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it was like, oh, what does this person have to gain? What are they gaining from me? What are they getting
yes.
from me?
Yeah,
like, that's the if thing they're is- not getting from me, if I'm not gaining from them exactly what they're gaining from me, then they don't belong in my circle.
You got it. And I loved her so much. That was Carmen, I loved her so much. Everybody's like, oh my God, you guys look so great together, Jabbar. Like, this is the first time me seeing you smile since what Allison put you through, and since you, because like, it was just, I was just totally head over heels with this woman.
Yeah,
and
but
the
I mean,
thing
like,
that got
from what people are saying, that's surface. You know what I mean? That's from what they can see. That's
yeah.
the iceberg. That's just the top of the iceberg. They can't see what's underwater. You know, there's a big chunk of ice under the water that is red flags being ignored. And
I ignored them.
Hearing act, gaslighting, like you said.
Yeah, I ignored them. And like one time, I went down New York, and we were on a little bit. It's enough, but she love bombed the shit out of me. It was like, okay, you can come on down. But then when I got to Brooklyn, took the subway. I texted her, called her, texted her, called her, nothing. So I get to her house. And her son answers the door. Yeah, hey, come on in, Mr. Brown. Yeah, how you been, man? I'm like, yeah, good, good. I was like, where's your mom at? Oh, I don't know. I ain't seen her for a couple of days. So I'm like, what the fuck?
Was it like a drug thing, do you think?
Nah, I do. It came out she was cheating.
No.
She came in like 15, 20 minutes after I got there. She's like, baby, you're here. Mm-hmm. I said, yeah, you told me to come here. I said, I got a Comic-Con thing. I like, they're going to show my premiere of the movie thing that I've been working with and people stuff. And she's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. She said, you know, baby, I love you. And she says, what's going on? And I was like, I showed her the ring. So I put money down on the ring. Then she got upset. So why would you be upset? Then she came back and was like, you know, I'm sorry. You know, I'm wrong. And then... I just got to go to work. I said, so where the fuck were you? Like, why didn't you just come the fuck home? I said, I was going to surprise you this because you would be home asleep. I said, where the fuck were you? I said, this little thing you've been doing lately, I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
She said, I'll talk to you after work. I said, okay. So I'm chilling the whole day at her crib. Me and her son, we're smoking weed, everything. We're chilling, watching movies, everything. She comes home. We chill. We make love two or three times at night. I do my show. I go to her apartment. It's around like 3 o'clock. She didn't show up for the con. She didn't show up for my show or anything. I'm going on red carpet and everything. And she didn't show up. So I get to the house. She doesn't show up the whole night. Hmm. And her ex-husband comes in. He takes the son to work. And he's like, where's Carmen? I said, I don't know. He said, oh, fuck, man, really? So I just want to go home. He said, I can see it. It's written all over your face, man. He said, I'm sorry, bro. I'm really, really sorry. It seemed like he was a good dude. He said, well, since I met you, my kids are happy. Her mom loves you. And it seemed like you guys were like, I thought you guys were doing really, really good. And I said, me too. I said, but how do I get on the train to get home? He was like, well, it's flooded, so you might have to take the 3. And then you have to take the express of the 4. And I'm not even good at some of these subway shits.
Oh, yeah, man. I have not mastered them.
I suck at it. You know what I mean?
My little sister moved to Brooklyn. And I'm from Philly. When she was living here, she like mastered it like that quick. She got real good at like the buses and the trains. She like mastered it real quick. She moved to Brooklyn. She mastered it like real quick. That's She's crazy. so sharp with that stuff. But me, I'm like, I don't know uptown. I don't know I don't know downtown. I don't know what. I don't know what this number train is going
to
take.
I had to do
me.
It by eyesight. I was like, this is Hoover, because I was leaving from Hoover, and I could just check it from like. I was like, this is my stop. But the only thing that fucked me up was that I had to get to Chinatown to get this bus.
What is that bus called? The Chinatown bus.
The Chinese bus. I forget what it's called.
I've taken it before. I know exactly.
Yeah, and we were doing it.
It's like $5, right?
Yeah, $25. And like sometimes she would disappear. Like the first time she did it, she didn't get off the train. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that was a huge red flag. Mm-hmm. She just ghosted me for like 2 or 3 weeks. And like I stopped texting her, calling her, and then she just called out of the blue, you know, can we fix this and this and this and that and this and that? And it was just, I just looked over red flags because I just loved her that much. She gave me something that like I realized I could be loved again. That was the thing I realized, because I thought I just couldn't, because I love so hard.
Mm-hmm.
I have the biggest, huge heart, and I love so hard. And I realized later on, I got to my counselor, I talked to him, and they were like, she's avoidant. She has avoidance type of style. She said, it's almost close to a narcissist, but that's what you always attracted that, Jabbar. And that's, she's like, after, like, you should have learned from like Lorna. When Lorna tried to kill your children, you should have learned certain people do certain things. If they can run, they're going to run. And that's what
one did to you the first time, and then you had somebody that was a covert, and coverts hide everything, and she hid everything, and you were with her 23 years. That's why you never got married. You gave her two rings. You bought a $54,000 house for her. You put her mom up. When people say, Jabari, you literally broke your back, you literally broke your back. You were almost paralyzed for this woman. Mm-hmm. And now you don't have your kids. You have no home. And you're staying in an apartment just barely making it. And I was like, this is some bullshit. So when I met Carmen, like I had other females and stuff. But when I met her, the bullshit stopped. And it was just exciting to be into something. And it just, it felt so right and so real. Like to this day, if she even came back to this door, because she has keys. If she called to this door and I think, that's something I wouldn't be able to fight.
Brother, change the locks, man. Change the locks.
You know,
get a chain. Get a chain. Like if you can't face her, avoid her like she avoids you. Like,
yeah.
Let her knock on the door and say, "Bro, sorry, you can't come in. You ain't welcome. You were yeah. You're welcome." Like, and, like truck. Like a phrase that me and my family likes to use. We say it all the time. Me and my brother and sister. We say, "Shrugs you beat. Shrugs you beat.
Shrugs you beat.
Just, shrugs you beat, shrugs dog. You beat. I don't.
I like that. I mean." I even sent her a picture. I threw all her clothes out and everything. You know what I mean? Bro, it was like, we're going there, Jabbar. I said, you dissed me. You dissed me on Christmas, Thanksgiving, everything. I said, you destroyed something. You could have had the world. But go ahead and do whatever you want to fucking do. Yeah,
dude. You can't teach that's okay. Like, in her head, she's learned that it's okay to do that to you. And it isn't.
Yeah.
So whatever comes up again, I'm not an expert. I'm not licensed counselor in any way, but I could say as your peer, as somebody who already like knows you and wants to be your friend, don't stoop to that.
Yeah.
Shrugs you beat. If you're going to steal anything that I say, go ahead and say that. Apply that where it applies.
Shrugs you beat because like she missed out.
Yeah, dude.
She missed out. She missed out on the great guy.
Could have been on red carpets and shit, girl. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, you know, like, because Michael Jai White was like, is she going to show up? And I was like, I don't know. Like, even my friends, like, the guy from Last Dragon, Ty Mac, you know what I mean? Like, I'm hanging out with them. They're like, we seen her online. Like, you two look incredible together. Like, is she going to show up? And, oh, man, it was the worst.
Right.
It was the worst of the... The people were there. They were just waiting. You know what I mean? And I did my interviews on the thing and everything. They were like, how you feel about the movie and stuff? And, you know, because you helped. I was like, yeah, whatever. I mean, they were just like that. It was just like the energy was gone. The energy was gone. And the guy that, I don't know if you ever watched Good Times, the TV show Good Times. The guy, Michael, the little boy Michael came over and gave me a hug and was like, he's like, your energy has totally shifted since you got here. He was like, can I just buy everything off your table? He said, because I just want to make you smile, bro. Mm. He said, I just want to make you smile. He said, because right now.
He's trying to buy my love, sir.
Yeah. And I was like, I said, yo, all I can do is think about is Black Jesus, the one, like the JJ thing. And he was like, yo, I'll sign it for you. He's like, but can I just give you a hug? And I was like, damn, I look that bad. You know what I mean? That's when you know you're just.
I think I've told the story on this podcast before, but JJ Walker, right? That was from from Good Times?
Yeah.
That kid. Yeah. I opened for him once doing stand-up.
What?
And he was such an asshole. And not only was he a big asshole, he wasn't even a comedian. He wasn't funny. Like he didn't do jokes or nothing.
He's just a bitter dude.
I was like he started like trying to light me, which in comedy, if somebody gives you the light, it means you got a minute left. He kept trying to light me when I was up on stage. And then when I got off stage, he didn't even look at me. Like he kept on like, when a dog like shit on the rug and you're about, when you're like, yo, what's this? And the dog like,
Yeah,
That was what he was doing. And then he got up on stage and he was just going, well, I got this merchandise at my merchandise table. And I got these t-shirts at my merchandise table. And I got these pictures at my merchandise table. I'm like, none of this is material, sir. Not one bit. Like,
and so you do comedian stuff too?
Yes. Yes.
It's crazy that you said, because everybody's like, Jabbar, when are you going to, like, won't you try it? I've been, like, people have been asking me for years.
But dude, so, you got the ability to, like, you got so much experience to pull from. Like, you've been somebody who's done some stuff. So it's not like you would be doing it and starting all over again. Like, this is, like, I think the struggle that I deal with as being somebody who's a wrestler. I don't use my wrestling fame. I don't use my like movie credits. I don't use any of that stuff in comedy. In comedy, I just go there and I say, I'm Corey Castle. But I don't say, like, I'm Corey Castle, the pro wrestler. And this, because I think people think that any of that stuff, they, like, you know, people who come out and see comedy, they're not coming to see me specifically. Like,
yeah.
So, like, I'm just there. And if I say that I'm from the wrestling business, they think that's a bit. They don't believe it. Like, they think that I'm just making that part up. And they think that's the joke. And like, I would just be like, okay, I'm just going to be a comedian who does material. Like, I want to be a funny comedian and I want to be an entertaining wrestler. I don't want to be a funny wrestler. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it makes total sense. Like, that's what you just took the, like, well, you took my answer. Like, well, you took my question. Because I was like, how do you separate this from this?
And my friends be like, I've constructed so many walls to separate so many things, and it's a strange thing. And I mean, this is an overshare, but like, I got this, my trainer is my teacher, the guy who taught me how to wrestle. One of my trainers, the coaches, his name's Eddie Valentine. He's openly gay, right? Mm-hmm. But he wasn't gay. He wasn't open. He was gay, but he wasn't open.
Yeah.
He wasn't out back when he trained me. But like, he was like, it's to him, he said, sexuality and pro wrestling are so separate to me. Like, they're so not the same thing. So like, I never felt a creep. He never was a creep. Like, never felt like any weird shit. Like, he was just a good guy. And he told me about, like, cause he came out to me, like a bunch of years later. And like, it didn't change a thing.
Like, I had a friend like that. Not even cut you off. I had a friend like that. His name was Eric Cooper. And when I got in the combo game, like,
you're hanging with Mr. Cooper?
That's what it was. That's what it looked like, too, because I was with him. And they were like, and people would look at us like we're twins. They'd be like, well, you got the two ball-headed guys. You wear glasses. You do comic books. He writers. And he's everything else. And one time I just asked him, you know, and he was like, yeah. He said, I'm gay. I said, I know. And he was like, what do you mean I know? How do you mean you know? How do you get it? I said, because I just know. Dude, he was like, are you going to be cool with me still? I said, Eric, you're my best fucking friend. I said, the only thing is, I don't want you to ever hit on me. And just don't steal from me. He never hit on me, but he stole from me. And that's the only thing that we're not good. We're not really good like we used to be. Like, I can still talk to him and everything. But it was never, we never had a thing about getting, like, he would talk about his dates. I would talk about my relationship. He'd talk about it. And he was like, bro, what do I do? And I said, yo, just make a comic book. Instead of all these fake motherfuckers, just because they want to be, you know, Marvel, DC, they want to cater to gays and stuff. They're making superheroes that were already straight to gay. I said, just make a character where it just starts out gay.
Well, and I mean, there is an epidemic. And I'm not against this because, my mom's gay. My big brother's gay. My trainer's gay. My brain surgeon was gay.
My daughter is.
I have no problem with with the LGBT community at all. But I'm saying there is an epidemic of propaganda, like, pushed real hard towards consumers of content. So, like, things are like, there is like almost like a like a adversity, affirmative action, like inclusion. No, representation is important for sure. I love that.
Yeah,
I love when, like when I watched the Star Wars, the one with the little Asian girl in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, I love this for like little Asian girls. They can see themselves in this. Like this representation is important. I think I remember feeling like there's already so much that I could put myself in, but there's probably not a whole lot of stuff that everybody can put themselves into. And somebody can watch that and be like, I could be Star Wars. I could be, you know what I mean? I remember feeling like, I hope everybody gets that at one point or the other, but I think overwhelmingly, overwhelmingly, I think it can trickle in for sure.
They shoved that whole agenda down our throats. It was just when Barack Obama was president and everybody was like, oh, I like the new Black Spider-Man, all this. I can't stand that motherfucker.
Miles Morales?
I can't stand that shit. I don't want to see that shit. If he didn't come out that way, I don't want to see it. If just because it's cool because we're in, it's not just that we're in. We always been here. So just because we have a mixed president doesn't mean, oh, let's start changing our characters and have Black characters. And you don't want to sit us at the table and talk to us.
I like that voice that you just did. It was real. It was real. It was a real nerd.
Let's have some Black characters in there, please.
Yeah. Hey, fella, I like the way you're doing this. You have a lot of Black characters. Why'd you do Black characters? And I'd be like, well, not to be mean or anything, but nigga, I'm Black. I'm good at it. Like, it keeps my teeth white. What? No.
That's why I have a mustache.
Look at your. Like, my girl be like, yeah, he probably says it probably like 60 to 70 times a day. That's just the way Jabbar is. And he even calls his children, like, come here, little nigga. And that's just the way it was. I mean, that's why I was growing up. Like, my dad be like, little nigga, you just fucked up the HBO box. You just knocked it off the goddamn wall. And I'd be like, my bad. Nigga, is your mom a motherfucking glass maker? No, she works at Photomat. Well, nigga, get the fuck out of the way of the television, man, nigga. And I'd be like, you know what I mean? It was always, and I would go to school. And they'd be like, Jabbar, come up to the board. I'll be looking around like, they'd be like, Mr. Brown, come to the board. And they wouldn't get it. And they'd be like, why'd you come up to the board? I'd be like, because I'm not used to somebody just calling me Jabbar. It was like, I'm used to little nigga. You know what I mean? And then when I said that to the teacher, like, I had to go home with a goddamn thing clipped to my shirt. And Jabbar is using the nigger word. And I'm like, Mom, I didn't say it that way. I said nigga. And she was like, oh, the teacher's calling you nigga. And now you're saying the word nigga. Oh, wait till your dad. Man, my mom, my aunt, my cousins, they, man, I got so much of a beating for using this word.
Dude,
I'm like,
dude. I was confused. They take turns beating kids back then. Like a whole family and a teacher and like each parent, like everybody, it was like a pinball machine.
Yeah. I was like, I mean, my mom was on the phone and my sister's, she's in trouble for some shit. And my mom's like, oh yeah, the bitch just stole my maxi pads and she just using all my shit. But this little nigga comes home with a damn paper cut through his chest and he's talking about nigga this and nigga that. And he called his teacher. He said to the gym teacher, well, you a nigga just like me. And then she got pissed off. And this nigga's only in first. I said, see, you ain't even call me nigga, Mom. And she was like, well, I'm sorry, Binky. I won't call you that anymore. I'm like, then why am I getting a beating for this? Boy, you better go out there and get the switch. I was like, son of a bitch. Like, I was losing all the way around. And I was like, and to this day, she be like, she looks at me now when I say it. She just,
to inform you as a young child that there's things you say in the house and things you can say outside of the house.
Yes. And I thought it's because my dad would say it. And
right.
And like, it's only two Black families lived in my neighborhood at the time.
Right.
So like, if I said something, they'd be like, you know what I mean? It'll be a fight, like all the time. But I thought I just got so comfortable with it. And it was just a weird, strange thing. And I'll be at a Comic-Con and I did panels. We had a Comic-Con thing, it was called the Chillin' Circuit.
Mm-hmm.
And I got all minorities, and we did a thing, and like.
Well, I think that that used to be a part of a stand-up comedy too. They would do what did they call them? Brown Sundays or something.
Yeah, you know exactly. Yeah, Chocolate Sunday mm-hmm. thing. Yeah. And it was kind of weird because John Cena, it was for a Slumber Slam they had up in Delaware one time. It was Booker T. What the other one? Ray was there. His brother Ray was there. Ray Mysterio was there.
Stevie Ray.
Kurt Angle was there. Mm-hmm. We blew out the water. Mm-hmm. We had so many people because they'd never seen that many minorities in one room, and it was so cool because John Cena was like, "Yo, I love what you do." He gave me a hug, and like he was like, "Yo, keep doing what you do." And he was like, "But some of the words you use," he said, "I know that." If you change that up just a tad, to affect that you did, he said, because I was watching people's eyebrows and people were just coming from our panel and leaving our panel to go see you guys. And he was like, just change it up the way you talk. Because he said, don't make it a gimmick. Make it real, bro.
Well, this is part of me talking to you about the comedy. Like, you don't necessarily have to be a comedian, but you already are a comic artist. So a comedian is also called a comic sometimes. So you can kind of like do like readings of like jokes you wrote and act like you wrote them for a comic book or whatever. Like, you could do it like as it's a panel where you're mm-hmm. doing like stand up, but you're reading something you wrote, or, you know.
Or yeah, and everybody was like, why don't you be a
comedian? It can translate, I think.
Yeah, and they were like, that's what everybody been saying for probably like 19 years. They were like, Joe Jabbar, like, why aren't you a comedian? You make everybody feel comfortable. Even though it's raw, you have like a Cat Williams, like Eddie Murphy mouth, but you have this Paul Mooney like in you that people it raises the eyebrow, but then they're laughing and they feel comfortable because it's like talking to one of their friends.
Yeah.
And when you're with one of your friends and sometimes you say like some jokes and your friend, it's so funny and you just know that you guys are by yourself and it's funny. It's like, but you make everybody feel comfortable and it's funny. And I was like, I'm not trying to be funny.
Paul Mooney, dude. I think about this quote from Paul Mooney all the time, and I used to just say it. But mm-hmm. I think I wanted to avoid potentially getting in some trouble by saying it. But did you ever see on Chappelle's Show when he did Ask a Black Dude?
Oh my God. My fucking ribs were killing me, yo. He's hilarious on that shit.
When he says, he said, everybody want to be an N, but not everybody want to be an N or whatever, right?
Yes.
That's, I feel that about wrestling. People want to come up to me and talk to me about how I can get them in the wrestling business. And then when I start talking to them about work that they need to do, then they start blowing me off. When I'm like, oh, you got to research it. You got to know good school. You got to know people. You got this, that, and that. I'm like, oh yeah, but I know you. Oh, you think you can ride off my work that I did? Like,
no.
So well, I would quote.
Do some shit off the turnbuckle. Like, I think when you did that shit off the turnbuckle thing, I said, he's real with this shit. Like, he's no fucking joke. I mean, the power bomb, oh my God. Even a double power bomb thing, yo, you're a bad motherfucker, yo.
I mean, it's just muscle memory, man. It's just, to me, like, certain matches and stuff is the same. Like, I consider wrestling and the sport of wrestling, of pro wrestling, as like an art. So like it would be the same as like you drawing like your signature character. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like how that just comes to you. Mm-hmm. I look at that as like some of what my art is, in like a little bit of what the muscle memory of it is, and a little bit of the calluses that I built up in the last 22 years of doing it.
Yeah, because that's like, that was one of, like, too much, like, my phone died, and I was like, I want to interview a little bit of him, like, on his own shit, you know what I mean? Because I was like,
yeah.
My thing is, I wanted to ask you, like, the preparation for a match, like, how many hours do you do for preparation for a match?
I mean, I would like to let you interview me. So let's start right now. Okay. You can ask that question. All right. How many hours does it take me to prepare for one match?
Yeah.
I don't do preparation for particular matches because things change so quickly. Like if you look at any wrestling poster, it'll say card subject to change because they could advertise it one way and then maybe one guy's not there. One guy is sick, couldn't show up. Somebody's hurt that day. So you can't, like, everything has to be fluid. You know what I mean? Be water, my friend. Right.
Yeah.
So
like you're like the cup of water and you can, you know what I mean? Like, cause you're the only one I really like. I Jake the Snake wouldn't tell me.
Mm. He was like, well, no. I mean, he comes from a different age, man. He comes from strict kayfabe age. And I think right when I came in, kayfabe was still there, but it's fade. I watched it fade. You know what I mean? I watched a lot of things about the wrestling business change a lot in the last 20 years. I've watched a lot change in the last 10 years. I've watched a lot change in the last 5 years. It's ever evolving. And if you're not evolving with it, so even if it's evolving in a bad direction, but like you got to get those bookings. You got to be relevant in some way.
Yeah. And that's why I didn't understand. Like, cause the way you do it, like, you know what I mean? Cause I know you with like a corporation thing. So like my thing is like you said, you know, some guys, you know, when sometimes somebody doesn't show, but you know, this guy's fighting style, you know, that like,
Oh yeah, dude. Things have changed a lot. Things have changed a lot. If like, I'm going to be wrestling somebody who I don't know who they are, I've never met them before, I'll look them up on YouTube. I'll watch the kind of stuff they do. Like, and I'll be able to prepare myself for like just mentally. Now, I don't have to do anything specifically like physically to prepare for it. But like that YouTube didn't exist when I first started. Like, yeah. I would just have to like figure it out that day. It's a little different now. It's a little bit different now.
Call them bumps, man. You gotta like what?
Yeah, I got. Sometimes it'll be like you'll just figure it out that day, and that was, I mean, it'd still be like that sometimes because like, I don't know everybody. I don't know everybody that I'm gonna get in the ring with. I don't know them all. I don't. Sometimes there's people I just meet them that day.
Anybody that you get in the ring with because you guys run it so smooth, and like people are like, oh, it's fake. Like, no, it can't be fake because these motherfuckers are tearing each other the fuck up. You get in the ring and say, oh, it's fake. You might get slapped like that motherfucking reporter. Oh, my ear is busted. Oh, my.
John Stossel.
You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you might get fucked up. You know what I mean? I think this is fake. Yeah. How do you do that? Like, you might get the Hulk Hogan treatment. I'm going to knock you the fuck out, put you in a sleeper hold, knock you the fuck out on, like, you know what I mean? Yeah, like,
and he put that dude in the front face lock and knocked him out. His head right on the ground. Yeah.
Mr. T was like,
and Mr. T was standing there and he's like, he's just sleeping.
I think the sucker's kind of hurt, but I think I'm going to sit down. What do you say about Hogan? Well, I didn't know, brother man. He was a good dude. I didn't know. You know, these motherfuckers going down. I didn't know I didn't even know the story behind it, but then now they have the story behind it. I didn't know he even got fined. He got fined big time.
Yeah, he got fined. Sued and everything.
Oh,
yeah.
Hell.
The thing is, like, wrestlers, I mean, I can't speak for all wrestlers because I don't know all wrestlers, but I think that, like, generally we kind of don't know our own strength. So somebody that we're going to perform a move to, who is a wrestler, we'll just do it the way we'll do it. But when we're doing it to somebody who's not a wrestler, it's going to hurt them a little bit more because we're used to taking these things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like anything that would have been like that John Stossel, David Schultz thing, when he said, I think it's fake. And then the guy's like, oh, that's fake. Ah, that's an open hand slap. He's like, yeah, I could open hand slap a wrestler any day and that they'd be fine. But some little skinny guy comes up to me and tells me he thinks it's fake and I slap him like that. He's going down.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like Dr. Death Steve Williams, he did it. That was, Dr. Death was one of my favorites for many of years. You know what I mean? Because Tommy Rich used to go at it and like, I just love to see Tommy Rich just be blood. You know what I mean? Like, You know, I just loved it because the Dr. Death was just the shit. You know what I mean? Like,
my only really experience with knowing Dr. Death was probably when he just like came in and was managed by JR for a minute, like Attitude Era. I don't know. I never knew him, but I'm saying like, I'm saying as my familiarity with him, because like, I didn't become like a big wrestling fan until like 96, 95, 96. Like I wasn't a huge wrestling fan as a kid. I mean, and still at that point in like 96, I was 12. You know what I mean? So that's when I started watching wrestling. Wrestling's stupid. I just didn't know. I hadn't discovered. I think at that time, honestly, until I started watching wrestling, I never kept track of what day of the week it was or what time it was in the day. Like I was just living. That's why I was always late to school. That's why I was always late. I was always bad at all my grades. I couldn't tell time. I can't look at an analog clock and be able to read it right away. Like
you're like me.
I gotta be like 5, 10, 15, 20.
15, 20. Okay, so I'm not the only one. I don't even feel bad anymore. You gotta do it, and you're a bad motherfucker, yo. I don't feel bad anymore. Like
that same like math thing is why I don't follow football, because it's so much math and so much like, well, this many yards and that and each point, you score this and you get 2 points. You score this, you get 3 points. You score this, you get 7 points. You score this, you get 1 point. What?
Yeah, you're like me. Why can't we just have
basketball? Can't you score 1, 2, 3, 4? Can't you just say that the game is each thing amounts to this many points?
That's it.
I get a 3-point line in basketball, but I don't get why everything is this many points in football.
Then you got to go back to 20. Then there's another flag. Then you got to go back to another. I'm like, this shit is confusing, bro. It's really confusing.
Too many red flags.
Yeah. So it's like, that's why I said, like, when it came down to, because like when Superfly Snuka was talking about like his first, like one of his first matches against was TJ Strongbow. Mm-hmm. And he was like, Strongbow wouldn't tell you anything. And Bob Backlund would tell him, he's like, yo, like, you're going to go against one of the best. And he was like, Snuka was like, yo, but Backlund, like, you tell me how to do things. You tell me what to do, how to do it. How far I should, like, if you're going to lay down, I'd take the bump. He's like, you know, like, how far I jump, if I land on your chest. He's like Bob Backlund was so much of a
perfectionist. And Snuka smartened you up like that?
Yeah. And
he told you that? He told you that info? His generation would not have been more closed-lipped about that kind of stuff.
I think he just didn't care anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was just so high and drunk. I think he just didn't care. I mean, because he was, at that time, like Fox News was covering the thing that the lady at the hotel.
Oh, yeah, we talked about this the other day. It was like right when the convention didn't want him there because the allegations just resurfaced because he wrote that book and had different details on that girl's death from 83.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like even my girl was like, I don't want to talk to him. Is anybody could do that to a woman? I said, yo, like we don't even know. She said, but no, this allegations are just enough. And I was like, that's Superfly Snuka though. You know what I mean? Like to me,
you know where that was, right?
Was it in Philly?
Yeah, it was in Willow Grove. It was in Willow Grove. At a hotel in Willow Grove, and one of my best friends, I talk about him on this podcast all the time. He's not with us anymore. His name's Aaron Gainey. He was on a tag team called the Nigerian Nightmares, right?
Yo,
did you know them?
Yes.
You knew the Nigerian Nightmares?
Yes.
Okay, so you know Chucky, right? The other Nigerian Nightmare.
Yeah.
The shorter, bald guy. When he was a kid, his mom was a housekeeper at the hotel, and he found the girl's body.
What?
Yeah. So.
No way.
Whenever he'd be on cards with Jimmy, he would just avoid completely. From what Aaron told me, from stories Aaron told me, he would say he would just be too freaked out, and he would just avoid him.
And it's crazy because in a way, in your mindset, because like I have had the WWF action figures. He was like one of my favorite. It was hard to sit there. And then when he went on the trial thing, I was like, he did it. I said, I hate to sit there and say something. He did that shit. You could just tell the facial expressions and the answers. I was like, he's guilty as fuck. There's no way he can make it look good. He's guilty, yo. He's guilty. It was just like my mom about R. Kelly. And they were like, oh, no, he's a good man. He's good. I believe I can fight.
That's the best song. That's the best song, yeah. That's
all, motherfucker.
Oh no, he would never do that. Lord have mercy. He came out with church songs.
I said, yeah, but preachers do nasty stuff too. I said, why do you think half of the preachers don't even wear no clothes? Come here, little boy. Let me just raise my little skirt up and let me sprinkle water on your butt cheeks. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And like that's the difference. Like my man said, that's the difference between a white church and a black church. The black church niggas will fuck your wife. Them and the other church, they fucking your kids. So right now you got some crazy shit going on. And you can tell by the big, like CD Jakes, them motherfuckers. I only was with Puff Daddy. They called me the butt pounder. Like, nigga, that means you, like, hey, you ain't the good preacher that you've been saying. If Puff Daddy's like, yeah, that's the butt pounder. But you can't go in there. That's why you got 18 people in the big thing now. Like, you done. Like, I was like, these motherfuckers are off the chain. You know what I mean? Like, who do you trust?
I think.
And let me praise the Lord. What you? The next thing you know, let me touch butt cheeks. What? You just said this praise the Lord. Well, the Lord give you butt cheeks, so let me touch them. You know what I mean? Like, oh no, like what's wrong? You know what I mean? It's like it's some dusty thing going on. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm like, it's like what's going on with America?
I think too many men been getting away with too much stuff for too long, and it's all expiring. It's all expiring.
Yeah,
it's all, a lot of it's coming out into the sun. People are getting exposed. And it's about time.
I'd rather be Donald Trump, because if Donald Trump can get away what he got away with, I'd rather be Trump. And people are like, that's just rude, Jabbar. I'm like, nah, like imagine being Trump for a month. The shit you can get away with. Like anybody can be a president and be like, oh man, gee, I know she didn't have that much peach fuzz yet, but I just grabbed her in the pussy. And you still become president, you know you the shit. You know what I mean? Like, he's the most ignorant dude in the universe. But I was like, yo, I'd rather be him than the Pope. I said, motherfuckers love Donald Trump. They think he's God. They're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I don't like the dude, but people worship that guy. You know what I mean? They will sell their, I'll sell my soul for that guy. He's a great one. And I'm like, whatever.
And there are people who take up cause. I think we're living in a time where people love to feel victimized or oppressed in some way. And
yeah.
This person has identified with other, like, I think, like, you when you can identify with that oppression, that recreational oppression that people start feeling, and act like you have the answers and you can wave the flag that is the finish line to their suffering, they're gonna follow you forever.
Yes, and that's why I was like, because I couldn't stand them. Like all the stuff that went through, because like when I talked to Trayvon Martin's father, because that's what I did the book with Trayvon Martin's father, and mm-hmm. and he was like, you know, he was like, it's gonna get worse. And I was like, what do you mean? He said, if this guy Trump gets in office, it's gonna get worse. He said, so do you really want to make a book about my son? And I was like, yeah. And it was just so strange that all this time this stuff was going on, and then when he got in office, we got so much flack. We started going, like, we went to Baltimore Comic Con. They put us by the bathrooms. They put us by the popcorn machines. They were like, no, that's Jabbar. Like, that's when it started the chilling circuit thing. And they were just, like, I had to deal with it for a little while. Like,
it's got to be conflicting smells. I mean, the bathroom's bad, but popcorn's good.
Yeah. And that's why I was like, And people will see my ex and they'd be like, so you're not like a racist or anything? Like, you're not. I said, dude, I can deal with anyone. Because under the sun, you are a human being. And everything, you know what? I'm not Jesus. So I know I'm not perfect. So you might change in life. You might have a black nephew or grandson that might change your whole perspective. And I said, that has happened to me, where my kids weren't accepted. And two, they said, you know what? This is the most beautiful granddaughter I've ever had. Like, and I was like, dad, but your perspective was so totally different when I was dating your daughter. But now, since he's this, and that's when you can see the beauty of people, you know, like, and it's like, you can be so wrong, but then you come so right.
I you know, had this
and it's a beautiful thing.
I had this bit I was doing on stage for a bit. I was saying, my mother taught me, instead of tolerating people, to accept people, accept that all types of people need to exist for you to be who you are. So like, accept people. And I say, my mom's also gay. My brother's gay. My sister's gay. Her wife's gay. My little sister, she dates black guys. Like, that, it's all accept everybody.
Yeah.
And I was like, and all of them, they all hate my girlfriend because she's a vegan.
See? And I'm like, what? You know what I mean? It's like, it was just a bit.
They don't hate anybody.
And like, my daughter, they're the same. Dad, you like, you gotta stop eating meat. I'll be back with a Big Mac and some cheese sticks, niggas. I don't give a fuck what you're talking about. Oh my God, that's an animal. You're eating an animal. And then I get like, well, you're eating broccoli, nigga. So,
that's a living thing too.
we put hot sauce on it, that, so we and it's cauliflower, and we make it, and we put this, the buffalo thing. Like, I'm gonna go get a chicken. Fuck a cauliflower.
But like that lab grown stuff is worse. Like, more resources get wasted, and way more pollution gets made over that lab made stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you might be able to feel righteous in knowing that no animal died, but the resources wasted to make that thing might have killed countless things.
Other thing, that's why I said, you know, and I tell people all the time, the only thing we're promised on this planet is death. So everything else is in between. That's what you make it. But the only thing we're promised on this earth is
death. I'm going to start rapping, if you don't mind, Jabbar. A couple more things, and I'm going to send you off into the sunset with a hot dog and a handshake.
Yeah,
let you continue. Dude,
I gotta come down where you work at. Like, me, I gotta get my girl when she comes down from Virginia, man. We gotta ride up there so I can come up and meet you, man. Like, face to face. You know what I mean?
True.
You're a true dude. I mean, like if you got like when she comes down, I see if we can like double date. You know what I mean?
Well, you're in Delaware, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I got shows in Delaware all the time, man. The majority of my wrestling career has been spent in Delaware. I would say, okay. I don't want to say this to sound like I'm arrogant or anything, but in Delaware, in the wrestling community, I might be a little bit of a legend. I'm definitely a Delaware pro wrestling future Hall of Famer. There's a wrestling company in Delaware that's been around for 20 years. It's called DCW, Dynamite Championship Wrestling.
Yes.
And they've been based in Delaware the whole time. So my first match that I had there was in 2006. And I've been back and forth to Delaware for DCW since 2006. I've won every title you can win. I'm a Grand Slam champion there. I've won every tournament you can win there. I've won the Royal Rumble match they have. So like, I've everything you can have there. Like, I won their Stairway to Glory ladder match. Everything you can have there, I've had.
So have you fought in Christiana Firehall thing? Where they had the big ones up there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yo, the, like, when I was a kid, I used to go there. I used to go there and watch the matches.
Funkified wrestling?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
oh,
dude.
That's awesome, because that was part of my childhood. That's what I got. I was in it. Mm-hmm. I would go to the farmer's market and get some books, and then go down there to the fire hall and watch the matches and go on home. And you know,
FWB some and JD Smooth.
Yeah.
The Funky White Boys. Yeah.
Wow, dude. Mm-hmm. That is awesome. That is that's awesome. To me, that's awesome. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I definitely did one of the events there with Al Snow.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. One of the events there at the Christiana Fire Hall with Al Snow.
Oh, so you... Yo, okay, because I like Al Snow.
Me too.
I just don't understand, like, how, like, his career... Like, I was like, what happened to him? You know what I mean? Like, I would see him at the Fire Hall, I see him once or twice. But I used to watch one like WWF and everything, and
do you have Netflix?
Yeah. What happened?
He has a show on Netflix. There's a show that he has on Netflix where he's training young wrestlers at Ohio Valley Wrestling in Louisville, and the show's called Wrestlers.
Oh shit!
It features Al. It's the most of it is about Al Snow.
I gotta check up then.
Six part series, I think, on Netflix. It's rad. I love it. I already watched it twice.
Is he a good Is he a good guy? Like normally, like
yeah. He's a fountain of knowledge. I've been watching Al Snow as far like getting knowledge and watching like shoot interviews of his and stuff since I was young. Like I've always been consuming the knowledge and trying to sit under the learning tree that is Al Snow.
See, that's cool. Like another one that just totally blew my rocker was Ted DiBiase's son.
Mm-hmm.
We're at Baltimore Comic Con and he had he had some family there, so like I didn't know who he was, you know what I mean? And Jake the Snake was like, man, let me talk to you. He's like, nah, I'm good. And they were like, just come here, let me talk to you. And he's like, nah, he's like, well, I'm gonna chill with Lou. Him and Lou Ferrigno were chilling, and I see some guy coming in with a Hawaiian shirt, and he's kicking, he's real nice, and he's like, everybody's like, hey, and I go to him, it's Ted DiBiase. And I'm waiting for this pompous jackass, this dickhead, like because of the image that he put on.
Right. Kick the basketball out of the kid's hand.
Ever. He is so nice and polite. And it was just the total opposite of what I forget the black dude with the bald head, I think Vern or someone. He had the
Virgil.
Bow tie. Yeah, what a dickhead. What a dickhead. and DiBiase was like, just don't talk to him. He's bitter because he never wanted to put the work in. He just wanted to ride everybody's coattails, and he just wasn't that type of a wrestler. And, mm-hmm. and when I met the Samoans, they said the exact same shit. And then when I met Rocky Johnson, I don't speak to him. That motherfucker's an ignorant son of a bitch. Like, we had to put all the work in. And Tony was like, no, because that motherfucker one day when I was on Down and Out and I'm doing backyard wrestlings and stuff like that, he said, when I was Down and Out, that motherfucker made all kinds of fun. He said, now he wants people to pay for an autograph. He was like, nah, like, he's going to suffer, bro.
Well, I want to say this one thing, and then I'll move on to the next real quick. But I was telling you about my coach, Eddie Valentine. He was trained by the Wild Samoans. So the funny part was I was Eddie used to run these shows in Reading, PA, called WPW, and he had in the summertime there would be a show called the Summer Extravaganza where like it would be like all these names, there'd be tons of names that would come in, and there would be like it would be the afternoon was this car dealership, and the evening was at a skating rink. Right. So it would be like an all day wrestling extravaganza. And they'd have all these names in there. And that was, I think, where I told you the story of where my best friend lent a cigarette to Jimmy Snuka. And he did the same mark out thing that you did. He was like, oh, my God, I'm smoking with Jimmy Snuka. Right. Yeah. but one of the events, the one year he called and left a answering machine message. It wasn't even a voicemail. It was on Eddie Valentine's answering machine. And he said, hey brother, this is WWF Virgil. I was in the NWO. I was Vincent. I just heard about, and I was given your phone number from your brother, and he told me I could call you and get booked on that event to set up a table. And it was like the saddest thing. It was a very sad sounding voicemail. And then Eddie never called him back. But the day of, Virgil showed up with his pictures, 8x10s, and he set up a table.
Goldberg, like he tried to talk to Goldberg. Goldberg was like, nah, man. He said, you said some stuff about me in the locker room. And he said, me and Brett was trying to iron things out and you just kept on running your mouth. And he said, Brett, if it wasn't for Brett, I wouldn't even be Goldberg. And he said, I messed his career up. And you were in the locker room just talking trash on like how bad I was and stuff. And he said, you drove a wedge. And he was like, nah, man, you know, because if it wasn't for me, Hulk Hogan wouldn't be famous. And then you know, and if it wasn't for this, you know, I was like this.
You're trying to win would mean nothing.
Yeah, and I'm like, how's this dude saying this? And he used to get beat up all the time. Like, you weren't shit. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, that's so wrong because
I've never met maybe at that show at the car lot all those years ago as I met him, which might have been 2006 or something like that. It was a very long time ago. I don't know the guy. I have no heat with him. I got nothing bad to say about him, but he's kind of a little bit of a giggle factory for me.
Yeah. So like I didn't know, like I got an autograph picture, you know, and everything. So, you know, as a brother, I'm like, yeah, I'll support the brother. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But when he got drunk, I was like, okay, this is what the other guy's been talking about. That's why they keep their distance. And some stay in packs. They stay in groups of, you know, like they, it's just like if you have like your homeboy. So I guess they're so good with certain people. You know what I mean? Like Randy Orton is one of the nicest people I've ever met of a wrestler too. He was like, Jabari, like, you need help to get the elevator or something. I was like, who the fuck are you? And I'm like, oh shit. Like, you're Randy Orton. He's like, yeah. He said, I'm waiting for my dad, yo. And like him and his dad were signing autographs at the table. And I was like, that was the first time I ever got to meet. Like, I was like, you're Randy Orton. And your dad used to just, he get the barbed wire and they had the barbed wire matches. And he was like, just calm down. And I was just so hyped because I've been watching him all my life. You know what I mean? When I seen like, when the Four Horsemen would battle these guys and I was like, I was starstruck. You know what I mean? Cause it's like, it was just cool to meet these wrestlers. And that's why I was like, these guys are just, they're not what I thought they were. They're average, normal, good guys. They're like you. You know what I mean? Like you're really good guys. And I'm like, yo. Like, and they tell you certain things, like, don't go by that dude. And I'll be like, what? It's like, it's a good thing. So that's why I said, you're so good. You're a good guy, man.
I appreciate that, man. This is the part I always throw in here. The part of me wanting to start this podcast was I wanted to be able to have conversations with people who like could possibly mean something more in my life at some point, or people who maybe already mean something to me in my life. Like I've had conversations with my mom and my brother, like family members, and on the record, have an on the record conversations to tell them like how much they mean to me and how much they're important to me. What I want to tell you now is how much I feel excited about what's next. I'm excited about us working together in collaboration in any way. I'm glad. I mean, this is just the start. This is our longest conversation that we've ever had. But I'm stoked about it. And I want to offer to you, I know I've already said it to you before, but I want to say it again. If I can be a resource for you in any way, if you just need some judgment-free conversation, if you need a friend, I'm always here for you, man. You can reach out to me at any time. I respond as quickly as I can.
For me, just going through your Facebook and going through the YouTube and stuff, I appreciate you more than you know, because I know that now, even all the stuff and trials and tribulations I'm going through, if you can come back and do what you did and the sacrifice of that because of the love of the game, you know what I mean? You made me look at myself totally different. And I was like, you know, I destroyed my back, you know, and before people were like, oh, Jabari, like, but now you walk and everything. And I was like, yeah, but it, like, you know, I said, it's not like big, but then I see what, I was like, certain people go through even worse. My mom was, you know, she always says, you know, look at the news and Jabari, you're not doing so bad. And I was like, you know, since I don't have cable, let me look through and see what this guy's about, you know? And I seen you on the bed and I'm seeing it's like the thing going across. And I'm like, yo, he sacrificed everything for this game. He's real with this shit. You know what I mean?
In reference to that, I didn't need the surgery due to anything that had to do with the wrestling business. It was something like hereditary. It had nothing to do with the brain injuries had nothing to do with concussions, had nothing to do with any of that. It was something like I had a my veins didn't form correctly when I was in my mom's belly when I was a fetus. It didn't have anything to do with the wrestling business. The wrestling business didn't do that to me, but I knew I wanted to come back to the wrestling business to do something that I've never seen anybody else do before. And I wanted to know if me doing that would inspire one person. And if it's inspired one person, I'll feel like I've left a legacy. And if, you know, if that affects you, and then you take that on to whatever's next and you inspire somebody else, I'm stoked. I'll feel like I lived for that reason.
And I dig it. I asked my boss, Rob, at the job. He said, Friday, he said, just ask the boss. And if he needs like gas money or something, that we can get gas money. But he was like, if you could, you know, like, he's like, we would love to have him if he could talk to the kids and stuff like that. So like, I'm gonna see what we can do. We're gonna get you down there so you can talk to the kindergarten all the way to the seventh graders.
I would love to
just show them, like tell them like how to do it, like what you did through, how you did it, how you started and stuff. Cause it's incredible. You know what I mean? To me, you're incredible. You're an incredible soul. And I can see the aura around you. And
I don't know if I could I could talk to kids and not feel like I'm a super old man, because I'd be like, remember the Attitude Era? Have you ever heard of the Attitude Era? But
they do. They watch Ronan Reigns. They watch all the stuff. Because they watch it with their uncles. They watch it with their grandpa. So they know wrestling. So it's a cool thing. And it's like when I say, oh, I know somebody from wrestling, or I show a picture, they're like, my uncle knows that guy. My uncle knows that guy. Like, you guys watch it? They're like, yeah. And it's awesome. Like, and I was like, so you guys really like wrestling. And just to meet you, I have to have you in. I got to go talk to Mike and Ashley Biden. And I just asked the other person, and because I work with all of them, so I'm gonna ask so you can come in and talk to them about like the stuff like you went through, how to get there, and maybe we might have some wrestlers, you know, out of them little kids, you know what I mean? And that's what,
dude, you know what I'm fascinated by? I'm fascinated by having stuff on the record, like I constantly say that on here, but how cool would it be to like record conversations with the kids that you're teaching? And like asking them questions, like you're podcasting with them, like you're hosting a podcast with doing individual interviews with the kids and asking them where they want to be and stuff. And then you have that on the record. And then like 15, 20, 30 years go by and they go back and they listen to that. And they're like, oh man,
I would love to do something. If we can even set something like that up. Like I could set, like, I want to set something like if you wanted to do something like that, and you'd be like, yo, like, because their thing is, they pretend like they're the wrestlers. Do they? They don't think, I'm going to get you. Oh, no, you won't. My style is good. I'm like, yo, this thing is short on. I'm trying to make it rip, Mr. Brown. I'm like, nah, you just let it be, man. Like,
you're wrestling. So that being said, I want to say, things being on the record and this outliving us and living on for the next, who knows how much longer the world goes. But this lives on beyond us.
Yeah.
With that being said, I do a segment called Audio Time Travel. So this recording is going to be stumbled across from the people who love you the most, your kids that you're impacting, the kids that you've raised, the people who love you and unconditionally want to know more and more about you. And like, just search your name up and find this recording. This 2024 version of you is speaking directly to the 2044 version of those kids. Or even if you come across this in 20 years, what messages are you giving to the listeners in 2044 directly from this timestamp?
My thing is, be better than Mr. Brown. And if Mr. Brown can show you a path to be better than me, I'm going to show it. I ain't going to hide my hand. I just want you to be a better person, because being a good person is a good thing, but watch out for being too nice, because people take advantage of your kindness. So be a good person, but be aware of being too nice, because they're two different things. So be a good person. You don't always have to be too nice. But remember, love yourself.
Being a good person and being a nice person.
Yeah, so love yourself. Because I told them all, I tell the kids all the time, Mr. Brown didn't start loving himself until like 3 or 4 years ago. So love yourself, because it's a beautiful feeling. It's a beautiful feeling. Be a leader, not a follower.
Be a leader. Don't be a quart or a gallon, or just be a leader.
So like, definitely do, like we have the in-service day, and my boss is going to be there. So I'm gonna put them in their ear, and like, you got to come down. Like, I'm gonna get you to come down, man, because I think they need to meet somebody like you, and you're an inspiration. If you're an inspiration to me, and I'm 52 years old, and if you're an inspiration to me, you could be an inspiration to these other kids, and I think that you will be a good inspiration for them.
Thank you. I'd be psyched to do it. The way we wrap it up is, I normally say that hypothetically, I've gifted you this show. This entire show is your show now. Evolving with Jabbar Brown. And in your very first episode, your pilot episode of your new show, in a very Jerry Springer's final thought type of way, the most valuable takeaways from this conversation that can inspire people to be a better version of themselves. What are you telling them?
By all means necessary. By all means necessary, be a leader. Be outstanding and want to be great. And if you want to be great, you're going to be great. That's it.
Love it. Do you do any impressions? Maybe just that nerdy executive voice that you did?
Yeah. I mean, I do mad impressions.
What's your best impression?
Oh. It has to be probably like the martial art black belt theater thing, or Macho Man Randy Savage.
All right. And whichever you choose, the way we wrap it up is, I normally have you say, be fun, have safe, keep evolving. That's the way we wrap up the show. All right. The final be tag.
What is it? So be fun.
Have safe.
Keep all evolving. Right. Oh, yeah, brothers. Be good and be safe. I'm playing this Macho Man speaking. I'm gonna take you from another universe and bring it back down. And I'm just telling you right now, if you can feel it, oh yeah, this is me telling you, be the best you can be.
I appreciate you, man. I appreciate the. I say this all the time, every episode. If this is your first time checking out the podcast, if this is the first time and you got any value from it, please make sure to like and subscribe. Comment. If you exist, prove to me that you exist. Leave a comment on the YouTube. You know,
and I'm going to share this, people. I'm going to share this to everybody. Go to my man, Corey. Go to his Facebook. Go to his website. Go look on YouTube. The man is extraordinary. You best believe. So you better check this man out. And like, I'm good, but I seen something. This man is. Go check him out. Corey, like, yo, mad props, mad love, yo.
The currency of love, time, and effort means so much to me. So if you check this out, if you sat with me during any of this, man, I appreciate you so much. If you're ever going through something and you feel like you can't talk to somebody about it, reach out to me. My DMs are wide open. I'm gonna reach right back out to anybody who reaches out to me. I hope you stay kind out there. You know, stay kind to yourself, be kind to others, be fun, have safe, keep evolving.
Love it.
Show's over.